This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
Or access to an attorney. On January 13th last year, two lawyers, Carl J. Mayer and Bruce I. Afrin, filed a lawsuit on behalf of seven plaintiffs challenging the legality of what they assert are unconstitutional provisions of the NDAA. Their plaintiffs in the case, known as Hedges v. Obama, include former New York Times Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist Chris Hedges, Pentagon Papers whistleblower Daniel Ellsberg, and America's most well-known dissident and MIT linguist Noam Chomsky. On May 16th last year, U.S. District Judge for the Southern District of New York, Catherine Forrest, issued a preliminary injunction that barred the U.S. government from applying indefinite military detention of U.S. citizens. Later on September 12th, Judge Forrest issued a permanent injunction declaring Section 1021 of the NDAA unconstitutional. In response, the Obama administration appealed the decision to the Second Circuit Court of Appeals, which issued a stay of the injunction pending the outcome of the government's case. Your reporter spoke with Carl Mayer, one of the two attorneys in the case, who talks about oral arguments made before the three-judge panel of the appellate court in New York City on February 6th.
The law is unconstitutional. It goes against our most basic principles. Judge Forrest not only granted a preliminary injunction, but she granted a permanent injunction back in September. As soon as Judge Forrest granted the permanent injunction, the Obama Justice Department went crazy. They, at 11 o'clock on a Friday night, they indicated they were filing papers first thing on the following Monday morning, asking for a stay of the Judge Forrest opinion, and they immediately appealed it. And that's, in fact, what they did do. And unfortunately, the Second Circuit, which is the appellate court, federal appellate court, did grant them a stay until the appeal was heard. And the appeal was heard February 6th in the Second Circuit Court of Appeal in Manhattan, which is the highest court before the Supreme Court of the United States. That's where we are. We're waiting for the Second Circuit Court of Appeals to decide. We have vowed that whichever way this turns out, if we prevail, we will call on the Obama administration to stop this program of the military policing our streets. If we don't prevail, we will seek to have the Supreme Court rule on this.
Carl, can you tell our listeners a bit about the efforts in Congress last year to amend the 2013 NDAA, the National Defense Authorization Act, to be very specific, to exclude U.S. citizens from the purview of the U.S. government to detain them indefinitely. And those efforts, from what I remember, were unsuccessful.
That's correct. When the legislation was first passed at the end of 2011, it immediately became obvious, in the words of Brigadier General David Tice and 40 other retired admirals and generals, that this was the most major change in counterterrorism since 9/11. Because now the military are being asked to police our streets. These former admirals and generals were appalled by this. They said flat out, the military does many things well. Policing our streets is not one of them. So almost immediately after the bill's passage, besides the filing of our lawsuit, members of Congress went to work trying to amend it to protect citizens and other civilians within the United States. There was a year-long debate. The politicians did their thing, which is to pound their chests, make lots of noise, and in the end, nothing happened. The citizens and civilians were left unprotected. They couldn't even get into the bill a language that specifically said that anyone who was detained would have the right to habeas review, which is to petition the court to review their case after they've already been detained. But, you know, frankly, habeas is already in the Constitution, and the fact that the Congress couldn't even pass something that's already guaranteed people in the Constitution is really boggled my mind. But in any event, that failed, which is why we're pressing on with our lawsuit. The politicians aren't going to get the job done. We'll get the job done.
We are in the midst of a new controversy that's erupted into the public sphere recently, although it's been around quite some time, and that is the Obama administration's drone program, But it seems to me that this NDAA provision giving the government the right to indefinitely detain U.S. citizens is inextricably linked with the Obama administration's self-declaration that they have the right to kill any American citizen anywhere in the world without any due process. It's frightening and stunning all at the same time.
We haven't seen the memorandum. We've just seen a sort of summary of the president's memorandum, supposedly providing a legal rationale for the drone strikes. But the terms used in that memorandum are quite similar to the terms used in the NDAA. The drone memorandum talks about associated forces, meaning essentially that drones can go after anyone who's a, quote, associated force of al-Qaeda, which could be anything. What is the definition of an associated force? And same with the NDAA. Anyone who supports an associated force of al-Qaeda or an associated force of any group that's engaged in hostilities with any of our coalition partners, that's the nature of it. It is completely open-ended. It is completely inchoate. It is completely a violation of the Due Process Clause of the Constitution. And that's why we're trying to stop it. But the idea that the executive can do all of this without judicial review was most aggressively pursued by President Bush, or Bush II, George W. Bush. But Obama has gone even farther than George W. Bush. I don't understand what people are thinking in this area. That, you know, they elect Obama because they think he's going to stand up, and he's promised to stand up, to the Bush administration record on civil rights, civil liberties, and then he does worse than the Bush administration on civil rights, civil liberties. It's mind-boggling. You know, when are Democratic Party voters going to get it in their mind that, fine, if you want to spend a few hours trying to make sure that you get President Obama in who is better than the troglodyte Republicans, that's fine. But then don't give him a pass on civil liberties and just sit on your hands and say, oh, well, he's a Democrat, so he'll take care of our civil liberties, because he's not taking care of our civil liberties.
That was Carl J. Mayer, one of two attorneys representing seven plaintiffs in the Hedges versus Obama case challenging the government's power to indefinitely detain U.S. citizens. For more analysis on this case, visit our Between the Lines website at btlonline.org. Thank you.
KBOO Radio is a proud sponsor of the 23rd Cascade Festival of African Films, Africa Through African Lenses. The film festival will take place February 1st through March 2nd, 2013, Thursday through Saturdays each week. The majority of films were made by African directors and celebrate Africa's achievements, expose Africa's failures, and reveal the possibilities of change and a more hopeful future. More information on the Festival of African Films can be found at kbo.fm/CFAF23.
You are tuned to KBOO 90.7 FM Portland. The time is 10:15. Up next on Lucas Focus, Barbara Bernstein talks with author Andrew Nikiforik, a journalist based in Alberta whose award-winning book, Tar Sands, Dirty Oil and the Future of a Continent, exposes this disaster in the making. Before we go to that, though, we should say that this KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Wilkin & Company, PC-certified public accountants helping businesses, individuals, and nonprofit organizations make financial decisions based on their personal values since 1987. Wilkin & Company is located at 2435 Southwest 5th Avenue in Portland. Information at 503-225-1359 or wilkincpas.com.
Good morning and welcome to Locus Focus. I'm your host, Barbara Bernstein, and this morning we're talking about the dirtiest source of gas that we put in our cars here in the Northwest. In these end days of peak oil, the Canadian province of Alberta is on a mission to replace Saudi Arabia as the world's major source of petroleum. The once pristine boreal forests of northern Alberta are being transformed into gigantic pit mines as energy companies rush to extract some of the last of the Earth's petroleum reserves. The quest to extract and refine the thick, dirty tar sands that lie beneath what was once a wilderness of wetlands and salmon-rich rivers threatens the ecology and economy of North America. This morning, we're talking with Andrew Nikiforik, a journalist based in Calgary, Alberta, whose award-winning book, Tar Sands, Dirty Oil and the Future of a Continent, exposes this disaster in the making. Andrew Nikiforik is an award-winning author and investigative journalist. Over the past two decades, he's written about energy, economics, and the West for a variety of Canadian publications, including Maclean's, Canadian Business, The Globe and Mail, and Reader's Digest. Welcome to Locus Focus.
It's a pleasure to be with you, Barbara.
Well, until recently, the extraction of oil from the tar sands of northern Alberta seemed to be a pretty well-kept secret, at least here below the 49th parallel. Last year, shortly before your book came out, I read a pretty scary article in The New Yorker, I think it was by Elizabeth Colbert, about how that part of Alberta has been transformed into a vast industrialized wasteland. Your book gives a more detailed and in-depth picture of what's going on for what's been going on for at least a couple of decades. So why has it taken so long for this story to go public down here?
Well, you know, that's a good question. I think a lot of it really has to do with the fact that the average consumer of oil doesn't really think much about where it's coming from. And there's